Welcome to Geographical Thinking, a podcast full of ideas, stories, and conversations through the lens of geography. I'm your host, Guan Yu. Reflecting the past, facing the present. This is the model of Defining Moments Canada, an education partner of ESRI Canada, a heritage organization dedicated to commemorating definitional moments in our shared histories. Joining me today to discuss their projects is Louis Lebel, Digital Content Manager at Defining Moments Canada. Hello, Louis. Welcome to Geographical Thinking.
Hi, it's great to be here.
Tell us a bit more about your organization, Defining Moments Canada.
Absolutely. So Defining Moments Canada, as you described already, is a heritage organization. We want to focus on definitional moments. So moments maybe that not everyone knows about. You know, we all know the heritage minutes, and when we know Confederation, and we know, or I say we all know, the very big moments that are very known. What we want to do is we want to look at moments that are defining to Canadian identity, to Canadian medicine, to Canadian science. And we wanted to focus on micro histories and on pedagogical content to bring these moments into the classrooms. We're not in classrooms ourselves, but we're focusing towards teachers so that they are equipped and have tools to bring these different, lesser known, but just as important moments into the classroom.
So tell us some of these definitional moments that you have commemorated so far.
So the first, you know, first one I'll say is the first one we did, and Defining Moments Canada kind of started as a project to commemorate the Spanish flu pandemic in 1919. So Defining Moments started in 2019 to do that, which turned out to be very relevant, very quick, to talk about how important a pandemic was and how definitional it was in the way Canada did things, in the way the government developed after the First World War. The project was kind of focusing on, hey, look how important this was. And then very quickly, the project, like I said, became relevant, but also we understand very much how much a pandemic can affect things. So it kind of made our job easier there right away. So we did that one. We also did Juno 75 and VE Day 75, which are anniversary-based projects commemorating the Second World War at different stages. And those, we really focused on micro histories, looking at different stories of people who participated. So you tell the big story by telling the small story. That is a good kind of example. And we've done a few more science history or medicine history. We did the discovery of insulin, that insulin 100. Insulin was discovered in Canada in 1921. It was the first Nobel Prize for Canada. So that's a very definitional thing for a lot of people living with diabetes who would maybe not be living with diabetes today, or maybe would not have lived as long of a life. We've covered the 1971 Nobel Prize by Gerhard Herzberg in spectroscopy. So that was a whole different, you know, left turn. Now all of a sudden we're, you know, I'm a historian. We have people who work in history, and I have to learn what spectroscopy means. That was quite a big first step. And I'm skipping a few, but we're working now on a project that deals with residential histories and public health, residential school histories and public health. And we're working on a project that deals with labor history and unions and labor movements. So we try to keep ourselves on our toes and not get too comfortable. And we look at moments, like I said earlier, that aren't necessarily the most obvious ones when you think of Canadian history. And that's an interesting challenge to, why is this defining? And it turns out everything is defining in its way and for certain things and for certain fields.
I like that, how you said you are focusing on the micro history, that you're telling all of the small stories for these big moments. And that's really, I find that's what's really special about all of the content that you create. So tell us a little bit about how you approach these definitional moments and how you come up with this content. What's the thought behind the approach?
The way we kind of, we choose the moments, I guess I could say, is we need to find a project that we think is important and is significant, that deserves a major project. But we also need something that would get funded, right? So all our resources are free to access all the time. which means the funding needs to come from somewhere. And a large and majority chunk of that is always the Government of Canada. So we're often doing things that are relevant to anniversaries because we apply to the Commemorate Canada Fund. So this is often anniversary based, and we look for things that aren't the most obvious moment in history that every other organization is going to want to commemorate, or that every teacher already has a binder full of resources. And then in finding that, we try to find the interesting stories. As you said in the questions, it's the micro histories to tell the story. So, you know, if we talk about something like the discovery of insulin, obviously you're telling the story of Frederick Banting, who is the discoverer of insulin. But we also want to tell the story of the first person who was administered insulin. We want to tell the story of people who live with insulin today. We want to tell the story of Banting's lab assistant. We want to tell stories. So get to the larger meaning of the story by focusing on these small stories. So the approach really is, what is available? What can we do a project on? What should we do a project on? And then let's find these stories and really get to the bottom of it.
And the richness of the perspectives that you give to these moments is what I find very unique of the work that you do. Tell me about what's curatorial thinking and how that is unique to Defining Moments Canada.
Curatorial thinking is a registered trademark of Defining Moments Canada, and it came to be, basically, it's the founding of Defining Moments. So today we're an organization with multiple employees that have done multiple projects, but it really started with Neil Orford, who is the founder of Defining Moments Canada, who was a teacher and who utilized these types of methods in his classroom. The idea is that you approach learning history as a museum curator would. So what exhibit do you want to build, and why should it be built? And then you look through the archives and the history. What would I use? You know, for us, it's which micro history we use. And what would I use to tell this bigger kind of story? Curatorial thinking is about giving agency to the student, kind of in them choosing what they want to show. It's about sometimes moving away from the traditional kind of long essay and long historical article, but also keeping those, because if that's what the student chooses, that's what the student chooses. So it's a whole teaching and learning method that's based on giving agency to the student to basically learn by telling stories, learn by hearing stories, and by interacting with archival material and with sources.
You use multiple media and different vehicles to curate these stories around these moments. And RGS Story Maps is one of the tools that you leverage. I wonder if that's a tool that comes to the team pretty naturally. Where do you see it fits in your overall work of commemorating these moments?
I think the way you say it comes to the team naturally is kind of bullseye exactly what it is. If you consider everything I've talked about for curatorial thinking, which is the student picks information, presents information, kind of like a museum exhibit, story mapping is exactly that. An ArcGIS story map is a way to tell a story by using maps, by using images, by using different functions through it. It's not a large article. And you know, the way that the software works also is you can't have 1,000 words in each little text box, because then you're scrolling and scrolling and scrolling. So you have to curate what is important to say at this stop, at this spot, which is what you do when you curate a museum exhibit. I've worked in museums. That's my personal background. And you have a certain number of words before people move away from your text panel. And that's curatorial thinking, because you have to choose what's important to say with what archival image and archival document. And that's ArcGIS story map also. So it's a perfect fit. So like you say, it comes to the team very naturally, but it came to the team in for Juno 75, that project that we did, which is micro histories of people who participated in the Second World War and the landing on Juno Beach on D-Day, is a collection of stories that are mapped. So where did this person enroll? Where did they do their training? Where did they go to the war? So the story is curated and told on a story map just naturally. And VE Day 75 also goes through that. So it's projects that were fitting for that medium. And then now we've kind of, we're stuck with that medium because we love it too much that we're going to use it everywhere. We can't, every time we pitch a new project, we say, that's the first question. What story map are we making with this?
That's so encouraging to hear. And for visual thinker and learners like myself, you know, having those places and people and events mapped out, it just reinforces what the narratives tells us as what happened in the past. Now you mentioned the Juno stories, and that's the first one that you use story maps. And for that project, you interview 21 individuals, which is no small project. Tell us more about it.
So Juno stories is a project that's dear to my heart because it actually predates my involvement at Defining Moments, but I worked at the Juno Beach Center at the time. So at the museum in Normandy in France, and I was a student guide there when I was 19 years old. First time I moved away from home was to move to Juno Beach. So it holds a very dear place to my heart. Also, because I think it is very significant to think about military history from the perspective of people. You know, there's a lot of people who know military history because they play Call of Duty or Modern Warfare, and they know the exact type of gun and the exact type of tank. And there's people who know, you know, watch movies or play Risk or things like that, who'll tell you which date this army moved from point A to point B. But these weren't just armies of tokens on a board, they're people. And the social history impact of that, of why did people go to war, I think is so important, and to see exactly what they did. And if you talk to a veteran, you'll have a much better understanding of what it was like and why it was horrible and why we don't want this and why this is not a cool thing. I think a lot of military history people think it's cool because there's cannons and there's explosions and there's cool mechanic tanks, and those are interesting. But then you talk to veterans and it brings a whole different kind of reality to it. And it's a good way to apply the whole micro history technique that we talked about earlier. You talk about one person and apply that to the whole. I spoke to a veteran, his name was Norm Kirby, who he's from New Brunswick, I believe. And he had the choice, either you go to war or you continue working in the lumber fields that you worked in before. And he thought it was safer to go to war. He goes, if I don't go to war, I'm going to die here in the lumber fields. And that's not it's not about honor. It's not about duty or bravery. And it's not, I'm going to war because my country needs me. It's, I'm going to war because I need to have a job. And my only other alternative is this other extremely dangerous job in the lumber industry. And I'm going to take my chances in the military. And that is not something that you understand if you look at how, you know, the Russians moved into Stalingrad in 1940, I'm going to say 1943, but that's probably wrong.
Those are the exact moments who spark different perspectives of how we look at the histories back when and make that relevant because the human connection. In the Juno story, you also have a 7 sentences way. There are also educational components or resources you put out there to teach the students and to have these veterans of saying their stories in a structure and teaching them as the way for more of the younger Canadians to tell their story. So I thought that's very interesting. When you're commemorating these moments, it's not just an educational, you know, way to tell people what happened, but also encouraging that kind of learning of, now you know these histories, what are the ways of framing your story and connecting yourself into those moments?
It's always a question of making the learning relevant, right? And applying it to yourself. And I went to school and all my friends from high school are engineers now. Sorry to anyone who's not an engineer who's listening. I guess you're still my friend, but I mean, you know, so many of my friends weren't history people and would be in these classes and they'd go, why are we learning this? Why do I care? why is it important to me about someone in the Second World War? And it's about understanding why it's relevant, understanding why it's special, and why certain conditions led to this, and certain social history still has impact of this today. But then also, like you say, through learning that story, you're kind of thinking back on your story. If you think of a veteran that says, well, really the reason why I made this big decision, or this was the biggest decision in my life, or it makes you think back on yourself and on the things that impact you. So it's a big thing about relevance, I think.
That message, wanting to make history relevant is loud and clear to me when I'm exploring the insulin story on your webpage. Because not only you talk about the history of how it happened, you also did videos, interview mothers and kids who are using insulin today, making that relevant, making us reflect how those moments in the past are helping us today. The most recent projects that you did is Bryce at 100. I feel it's a topic that I want to learn about more. Tell our listeners what this project is about and what have you done for this moment.
So the Bryce at 100 project is really a very important project that we've done. And it's one where I've learned so much doing it. And I think we all have, and we've created resources that hopefully will help other people learn about this moment, which I'll tell you right now, I knew nothing about before we started on this project. In 1922, Peter Henderson Bryce, who was the chief medical officer of the Department of Indian Affairs, that was as it was named at the time, self-published a report basically saying that health conditions in residential schools were criminal. They were so bad. At multiple of his reports prior, he wrote yearly reports from 1907 onwards, were ignored. And the government's willful ignorance of his reports, saying that the health condition here, you're killing these kids, is what he's saying. And the government buried it, and eventually forced him into retirement. And the commemorative project is to commemorate his self-publishing of his report when he's in retirement, saying, if you're not going to do anything about this, I'm going to publish it because people need to know. And I think that's significant for so many reasons, but for the big one, for a long time I did our social media, and I could see the Facebook comments and things, and you see Facebook comments about their residential school history saying, well, either get over it, or we didn't know better. Once we knew, we stopped. And that's false. And that's demonstrably false. Peter Bryce published multiple reports. It was in the paper at the time. What is happening in these schools, this is 1922, and he said it as early as 1907, what is happening in these schools is criminal. These kids are being killed. These kids aren't being taken care of. And the last residential school closed in 1998. The last government-run one in 1996, and then 1998 is when the last one closed its doors. And that's 80 years before that these first reports are coming out saying, whistleblowing on this thing. And Indigenous people knew that these residential schools were bad. Indigenous people didn't need a whistleblower like Bryce. But, settler Canadians, they also knew. They also had a reason to know. So it's a very significant project. And in terms of the size of it, in terms of the meaning of it, we've created a lot of different resources. We've created the first translation of the report, which was written in English. So we've created the first translation of the report. The report was written and published in English. We've commissioned a translation in French, and we've commissioned a translation in Itoktitok and in Plains Cree. So for the first time, people who are Indigenous language speakers can read this report in their language. For the first time, it's available in both national official languages. And we've also commissioned readings of it. So there's an oral reading of it in English and in French. We're making two different podcasts that are basically made to dissect and discuss the heritage of the report and its impact on Indigenous public health. There's articles on the life of Peter Bryce, who he was and why he did it. Articles, and I think are very significant on the social determinants of Indigenous health. Why, and this answers the question we were saying earlier, why is this relevant? Why is what I'm learning from the 20s so relevant? Well, residential schools were in operation until 1998, and there's generations and generations of Indigenous people in Canada who have their social determinants of health affected by it. We're looking at mental health, we're looking at physical health, that the generational impact of residential schools is still being felt and will be felt for a long time in Canada. So we have an occupational therapist and health writer who wrote articles interviewing different Indigenous health experts in different communities and fields to talk about how do residential schools, how does that legacy still affect communities today?
It is a very big part of the history, very heavy-hearted. And
yes,
personally, what I find most valuable going through your content is that these multiple perspectives. You have Indigenous journalists who writes about this, how it's related to him, you know, how his grandma before she passed away, it's too heavy for her to tell this story to any of her family. You have a white male who grew up in rural communities in Northern Ontario, told about his journey. You have a perspective from young educators of how they're educated along the way and all of these. And on your website, you stress two-eye viewing. I think it's really multiple perspectives, and that's what makes these moments ever so alive, and to give people a holistic understanding of how different people perceive it and what their perspectives are.
Yeah, it's the technique of two-eyed seeing, or Eduaptamunk, is something that came from Mi'kmaq elders, and it's about looking at history, looking at things from the dual perspective, the Indigenous perspective and the settler colonial perspective. And it's important to look in Canada, in a country where colonialism is so deep rooted, to look at all these different moments and all these different issues from the dual perspective.
What's next to come? We've talked a lot about existing projects, great work that you and your team had put together. What are down the roads for Defining Moments Canada?
We have a project called the Hopes Profound, which is similar to our Juno 75 or Juno Stories project, where we're profiling veterans of the Korean War. We are profiling veterans of diverse backgrounds. So we're looking to profile a Black Canadian LGBTQ veteran. We're looking to profile a woman veteran, an Indigenous veteran. So we want to look, similar to our Juno 75 or VE Day 75 projects, what is the micro history? What is the lived experience, motivations, difficulties of someone who fought in that war? But specifically for Hopes Profound, it's for diverse Canadians, stories that are often not told or less told, and stories that have very unique messaging, very unique themes that don't apply to everyone who fought in that war. And another big one is the United Nations Declaration of Human Rights that was written in 1948, so the 75th anniversary is next year. So we're looking to do a commemoration on the anniversary of the drafting of the United Nations Declaration of Human Rights, and also to look at moments in which Canada exemplified or didn't exemplify the articles and the principles of the United Nations Declaration. And then lastly, we've got a project called Proud to Be, which is commemorating LGBTQ history in the 60s and 70s. So we're looking at the first prides, and we're looking at the first queer archives in Ontario, and looking at these very pivotal and definitional moments in those movements. And we're looking at story mapping a lot of the first pride walks and the pride tours throughout the country. So we've got a lot of diverse projects coming up for next year. But as we've done with all our projects, it's quite a turn from what we're doing now. Labor history and Indigenous public health history. We're going to be going to international human rights history. We're going to legal history, back to military history, the Korean War, and social history with the Proud to Be project. So
lots of exciting projects for us to keep our eyes peeled for. I really appreciate your time, Louis, to come onto Geographical Thinking and sharing with our listeners all of the great work Defining Moments Canada have done. And we look forward to more projects and stories coming from your organization.
Thank you so much for having me. And I just want to talk about how good or how great a partnership it is that Defining Moments Canada and Esri Canada have as educational partners. Because as we said earlier, it's hard to dissociate our technique and your software. So thank you for having me on to be able to discuss kind of our approach. And I look forward to more collaboration between our two organizations.
Louis Lebel is the Digital Content Manager at Defining Moments Canada. You can learn more at definingmomentscanada.ca. This podcast is brought to you by Esri Canada, a technology company that empowers people and organizations by the science of wear. Bye for now.